Oilers. We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. My name is Matt Weston, and tonight I'm joined by Tom Gower of Football Outsiders to kick off our 2019 NFL season preview / AFC South season preview. You know, if you listen to the podcast, you heard me talk to Tom 2 years ago, and last year I was unable to, so I'm really excited to do this again this year. How are you doing tonight, Tom?
Great, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, as always. And if you don't know, Tom writes for Football Outsiders. He wrote both the Titans and Colts chapter in the 2019 Football Outsiders Almanac. And I think I've read this book for like 8 years or so now. And if you haven't read it, go out and get it. It's really great. You'll learn a lot, Tom. You'll learn a lot from it. The writing's really awesome. And there's always like, I don't know, probably like 75 different things or 100 different things I learned. And it's also a really great fantasy football resource, too. So to start off with the Tennessee Titans, since 2016, the record's been 9-7, 9-7, and 9-7. This included one playoff appearance and one playoff win against the Kansas City Chiefs. During that run, their DVOA went from 3.5% to negative 5.7%, and then improved a little bit last year underneath Mike Vrabel to negative 4.9%. This offseason, they replaced Matt LaFleur at offensive coordinator with Arthur Smith after LaFleur left for Green Bay. They also, in free agency, signed Adam Humphries, Roger Saffold, Cameron Wake, and Ryan Tannehill. In the NFL draft, they added Jeffrey Simmons in the first round, but he probably won't play this year after tearing his ACL in the pre-draft process. And they also drafted A.J. Brown in the second round, too. So, Tom, do you think the Titans did enough to go from mediocre to good or mediocre to even great? And are you expecting them to finally get to that 10 or 11 win mark this season and really kind of solidify themselves as a playoff team instead of needing some lucky breaks to get there?
Yeah, the Titans' mantra this offseason has been from good to great, and they're talking about the transition from going from those 3 years of 9-7 to finally becoming one of the real Super Bowl contenders. The problem with that is that by FO numbers, they've been much more average than good, and they've yet to really make a breakthrough. The offense, one of the things that research at FO has shown is that changing coordinators often results in a step back in the offense in year one. Obviously, the Rams showed in Sean McVay's first year that isn't always the case, but a lot of times that is. And the Titans, we saw some of that last year with the Titans under Matt LaFleur in his first and what turned out to be only season as offensive coordinator, and we'll probably see some more changeover and some more growing pains this year with Arthur Smith. So it's our DVOA projections for the offense are actually moderately bullish. I believe we have them 12th in the league, which isn't as good as they were in 2016. But that's one of the things that'll really determine if they're good enough. If you look personnel-wise, they didn't make a lot of changes. They changed over the starting guards. They added to their depth at receiver. And Brian Arakpo and Derek Morgan really fell off last year, so they're looking to change it outside linebacker. Excuse me. But they lost two veterans, and they only added one in Wake. So it's really a lot. And though Smith's a new coordinator, he kept the same playbook as LaFleur, and based on the first two preseason games, it looks like they're going to do roughly similar things on offense. So it's the same players running the same schemes on both offense and defense by modern NFL standards, not a lot of personnel changer. So why on earth do you think the Titans should be any different than they've been in years past? And you know, the mantra of going from good to great is about internal improvement and doing more with the same thing that you have. And that's really where the Titans have to make a step forward if they want to make that good to great transition. And an area I want to highlight in particular here that you may want to go into later is the defense, which is really esteemed personnel-wise. If you look at something like Mike Clay of ESPN, you know, he's the big fantasy football guy, but he has unit-based rankings of all the defenses in the NFL, and the Titans are one of his top five defenses. The Titans were last year by yards allowed, which is the NFL's traditional measure of ranking defenses. They were third in points allowed because they're really good in the red zone and they didn't have a lot of possessions because of the way they played offense. But by FO numbers, they've been in the great muddled middle among NFL defenses. And they have the potential, based on the resources that have been invested in the position, to be a lot better. They just concluded joint practices with the Patriots, and some of the things that you heard from the New England people was, I thought Tennessee was better than this. So I'm not real optimistic about this version of the Titans being fundamentally different than the version of the Titans that we've seen in the recent past. But as I said about our FO predictions, sometimes it does come together for given teams, and the Titans could be one of those.
Yeah, so by the sound of it, it sounds like continuity is what they're banking on to make that jump from good to great and keeping the same sort of offensive scheme. Dean Pease was also a brand new defensive coordinator last year, and he'll still be here, and Mike Vrabel is the new coach as well, too. One of the things I think about the Titans, just looking at this roster, is they don't ever really see a core competency. They have a lot of talent just kind of slathered all across the roster. I think John Robinson is like built, a solid roster, but there's not like a really dominant position group anywhere there. He really hasn't like chosen pockets of the team to invest talent into. But I do think the one aspect of their team that could be great this season is their rushing offense. Last year they finished 11th in DVOA, and Henry was second in the league with a rushing offense DVOA of 23.1%. And so I know in your write-up on the Titans for the Football Outsiders Almanac, you had a table indicating the difference in Henry from the first half to the second half of the season. And I specifically want to highlight also the last four games of the year. Henry had 585 yards and 87 carries, which comes out to 6.72 yards an attempt, and he had 7 touchdowns. And yeah, those numbers kind of happen whenever you have a 99-yard touchdown run where you stiff arm 3 Jacksonville defenders and kind of carry yourself all the way across the universe. But I do think Henry was a different back at the second half of the year, especially the last month. So what do you think was the biggest difference in Henry's performance from the first half of the season, the second half of the season, and also in the last month of the 2018 season?
Henry played like a different type of runner. He'd been effective at times. He'd been a real big boom runner when he managed to find space to the outside. But for the first couple seasons of his NFL career, he didn't run well between the tackles. He was too easily tripped up by leg contact, and he was only really a good player when he got a head of steam going, and especially when he could unleash his powerful stiff arm. And the second half, the last four games, they really recognized that their passing game limitations were potentially crippling, especially once Marcus left the lineup late in the year, and they had no choice but to give Henry the ball as often as possible. But the change really started a couple weeks before that, as I note in the book. The catalyst seems to have been a meeting over the bye week with Eddie George, who outlined some of the same criticisms I've been harping on about Henry's play for the past couple seasons, that he was too tentative a runner between the tackles. He needed to, especially in the zones, the one cut and go zone scheme, he needed to really commit and go upfield and be more decisive running and to just run stronger. Because whatever else you want to say about Eddie George's career, he always ran strong. And it seemed like that was finally what it took for Henry to get going. And so, it's Greg Cosell of NFL Films, who's been there for 40 years, does a weekly segment on Nashville Sports Radio. One of the things that he talked about was how Henry, the second half of last season, looked like a completely different version of Derrick Henry. And while players generally do not change who they are, sometimes it happens. And it looks like we just saw a different version of Henry that we'd never seen before at Alabama or his first 2.5 years in the league, that second half of last year, especially the last four games when they ran the offense through him. And I think the Titans are hoping that they get that same Derrick Henry this year and can run the offense through him until the rest of the pieces come together.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the biggest difference too, was that his ability to run the ball between the tackles. His rookie year, he averaged 3.62 yards a carry between the tackles. In 2017, he averaged 2.69 yards a carry. And last year, that number jumped up to 4.5 yards a carry. And he had 7 touchdowns as well, too. And the same offense, Deion Lewis averaged only 3.07 yards a carry. To the offensive line, like you mentioned, they did replace Josh Klein and Quinn Spain with Kevin Pamphiel, who was on the roster existing already. And they did draft Nate Davis as well, too, could maybe start guard instead. And they also pay for Roger Saffold to come here and start left guard. Do you think the Titans' run blocking is going to be as good as it was last season?
Right guard is still an ongoing issue. It's probably going to be Kevin Pamphiel, as you know. I think they hoped for Davis to be able to come in and compete, but he's missed the last couple weeks of practice, including both preseason games, so that's not going to happen. And it seemed like a long shot coming from my lower level of program at Charlotte. And Pamphiel is a placeholder. I don't think he'll be that much of a drop off from Klein, but I don't think he'll be a strength. Quinton Spain, I thought, actually played pretty well at left guard last year. The problem that he had was he was good at blocking the guy who was right in front of him, but he was not that great at the second level. And I think that's where you really want to see the upgrade from Saffold. I think that's where you really see the upgrade from Saffold getting up and picking up linebackers. And I think the Titans will look to run run left a lot behind Saffold and Taylor Lewan once he returns from his suspension for the first four games.
Yeah, and I know Lewan, I think, is really underrated as a run blocker because he's a left tackle, and he'll be missing games against Jacksonville, Atlanta, Cleveland, and Indianapolis. How much of an impact do you think his departure is going to be? And you think Dennis Kelly can fill in, you know, even adequately whenever Lewan's suspended?
Kelly actually played really well on the right side last year, filling in for Jack Conklin, who missed a lot of times and wasn't that great. Right now, Conklin, another year removed from the ACL injury he suffered in the game against the Patriots in the playoffs at the end of the 2017 season, he looks a lot more stable and confident. So I think definitely game planning around Kelly's limitations, especially against the Browns and Myles Garrett week one, will be a focus for Arthur Smith. But at the same time, you know, he played well last year. He's not Lewan. They won't be able to run. He definitely won't be able to run block and get out in space. I don't see them running, you know, pin and pull with Kelly the way they can with Lewan. But I think they should be reasonably effective, even if they aren't as good as they'd otherwise have be with Lewan.
Okay. And also, one of the other weird things about this rushing offense last year, was that, well, I guess there's a few weird things about the rushing offense last year. One, they ran the ball a ton. They ran the ball mostly out of two tight end personnel. They ran the ball against a bunch of heavy boxes, too. And also, they gave Deion Lewis a bunch of carries. He had 155 last year. On these carries, he had DVOA negative 20.1%, and he averaged 1.6 less yards a carry than Henry. Why did Lewis have such a bad year last year, and how much of it do you think it was kind of the situations LaFleur put in, and you think Arthur Smith can use him in a better fashion?
Yeah, Lewis actually had a really interesting first half of the season to second half of the season split. The first half of the season, he and Henry really split time, and Lewis was actually pretty effective. He had a pretty similar DVOA to Henry. It was just the second half of the year he completely fell off. I think he had about a minus 35% rushing DVOA the second half of the year. Part of that was he got a lot of the carries in bad rushing situations, like second and long, which was a time of the game where the Titans really loved to run. And, you know, he'd get all the third down give up draws, and he wouldn't get the somewhat more efficient first and 10 runs, which started to predominantly go to Henry, especially those last four games. But I think he's a back where he's not really, you can give him 25 carries if you want to, but that's not really a good idea. Even if you look in New England, he had a lot of 3.5 yard per carry games when he got the heavy workloads with not that good efficiency. So I don't think he's this kind of back that you should want to run your offense to, but he does present more of an every down flavor than Henry, and I think you'll see him a lot on passing downs.
Okay, cool. And the weird thing also about the Titans offense too, last year Matt LaFleur comes in after being one of the Sean McVay proteges to come in through the league and receive play calling duties at a younger age. And last year, the Titans' offense was worse than it was underneath Mike Mularkey's smash-mouth offense. And so much is made of, you know, the Titans running an archaic system, how their offense is bad, how Mularkey's holding Mariota back, how this entire, you know, offensive set is kind of stupid in the modern NFL that we live in, or that's out there right now. And so underneath LaFleur, the offense got worse. It was kind of strange to watch, too. And so what were some of the problems that you saw with the Titans offense over all 16, over all 17 weeks last year?
The Titans realized at some point, for some reason, that they had no chance of becoming an efficient NFL passing offense. What we're really not sure about is when they figured this out and what the cause was. The two major possible reasons they decided this are, number one, Marcus suffered a nerve injury to his throwing arm in the week one game against Miami. He was out for week two. He could barely throw the ball in week three and had to come in for Blaine Gabbert and an injury, and they managed to win that game against Jacksonville, even though he couldn't really throw. But it lingered all year. I mean, that was the same injury that knocked him out. Knocked him out in week 16 and left him unable to play against the Colts in that wild card or bust game in the season finale. So it's possible that that's why they decided they couldn't pass and shouldn't try to. And the other reason was they went into the season with extremely limited depth at wide receiver, and their only veteran wide receiver, Rishard Matthews, basically quit on the team three, 4 weeks into the season, about the same time that Mariota was coming back with his injured throwing arm. So after the last 13 weeks, they knew they couldn't pass and they didn't really try to. Then they had the outside of Seattle, who is apparently crazy because of Brian Schottenheimer. They had basically the most run-oriented game plan in the NFL. And that's why you saw one of the focuses of this offseason by John Robinson adding a couple receivers who seem likely to play big roles. A.J. Brown's missed a good chunk of training camp, but he finally played in the first he finally played against the Patriots after coming back for the joint practices. And they also added Adam Humphries, who is a frequent Mariota target and the preseason opener, and who gives them a slot option. They just didn't have a slot option who could effectively take away the two-way go possibility last year. And that's something that they really needed, especially when they also lost Delanie Walker as a middle of the field threat in the season opener.
Yeah, so their receiving group this year is Corey Davis, AJ Brown, Taywan Taylor, which names that you've, I guess, have heard of before. And they also added Adam Humphries from Tampa Bay as that slot receiver addition, and a guy that he decided to go to Tennessee instead of New England as well, too. And the Walker will be back this year. Jonah Smith was, you know, he was okay as his replacement last season, too. So do you think this is the best group of wide receivers Mariota has had in his career? And also, do you think this is the year that Corey Davis finally breaks out after being a top 10 pick 2 years ago?
Second question first. Number one, Corey Davis has, by all accounts, looked really good in camp. Teron Davenport, the guy who covers him for ESPN, named him the training camp MVP. And he'll definitely play a big role in the offense. The other question is, will that constitute a breakout season? And the answer is, I think that depends on what you're looking for as a breakout season, because the Titans are probably going to run the offense through Derrick Henry. They're probably not going to be a high pass volume team, and the competition for targets is going to be a lot stiffer with the addition of Humphries and the return of Delanie Walker, and having some sort of credible option to throw to other than Davis. The Titans really, you know, they trotted out Tajae Sharpe and Taywan Taylor out there last year, but they didn't sign Humphries and draft Brown because they were really happy, or should have been really happy, with how Sharp and Taylor played. So it's not clear to me that Davis is going to have the volume that he'd need to have 80 catches and 1,200 yards.
Yeah, I was thinking of like a as far as like a breakout season goes, maybe like 1,000 yards and, you know, 8 touchdowns or so. That kind of seems typically nowadays like a good season from a number one wide receiver.
Yeah, and it's I just don't know where how much volume he's going to get, because typically, you know, Chase Stewart, who runs the stats site Football Perspective, highlighted that the number one receiver is by far the most productive on most teams. The Colts are a really obvious example with T.Y. Hilton and the junk that Andrew Luck was playing with last year. But there are two exceptions to that. One of them was the Bears, whose apparent number one wideout Allen Robinson didn't play all year. And the other was the Titans. And if you look at, you know, receiving DVOA for the Titans' top 5 pass catchers, they were all relatively equal, even though you often see the LaFleur, McVay, Shanahan offense really give their top receiver really high volume. So, you know, maybe, you know, if you look at it the right way, you could think, you know, this is going to be a really big year for Corey Davis, but I'm kind of skeptical about that.
Okay, and do you think this is the best receiver group Mariota has had the chance to throw to?
It almost has to be, just because of how bad they've been the last 4 or 5 years. The Titans have had persistent depth issues at wide receiver, counting on rookies for key roles with no plan B if those rookies haven't been great players. You know, 2015 they only kept 4 receivers, 3 of them were really inconsistent. 2016, Tajay Sharpe, a 5th round rookie, started every game. 2017, they basically didn't have their top 3 receivers. They basically had their top 3 receivers coming into the season for a game and a half, for 2.5 games, for injury-related reasons. And last year, as I've noted, they had no receiving depth at all. So this, on paper and in practice, this should be by far the best group of pass catching options he has, even if you think it's only the 25th best group of pass catching options in the league.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to do a formal ranking. I don't know where I'd put the Titans in terms of receiving core, but even if they're bad, they're still better than what he's been throwing to.
Yeah, it's much different than, you know, like 2 years ago, where Rishard Matthews' ability to block downfield was probably the most exciting thing about the receiving group.
Yeah, they should have options, and they're not limited if they suffer one injury.
So for Mariota this year, this is the 5th year of his career. This is his last year on this contract with the Titans after having his 5th-year option picked up last season. And like Jameis Winston, Tampa Bay, they're both kind of like entering make-or-break seasons for the teams they drafted him. As you mentioned, injuries play a big role in his decline last season. He threw only 11 touchdowns. He threw 8 interceptions. His pass DVOA dropped from -3.3% to -8.5% 27th. He didn't throw the ball downfield very often last season. He was sacked 42 times, and as you mentioned earlier as well, too, that same nerve injury that he suffered, ended up resuffering and re-injuring in Washington, took him out of that week 17 winning it in game against the Colts, and Blaine Gabbert started it instead, and that ended their season. So are you expecting for Mariota to bounce back this year? Do you buy into this whole idea that he added muscle to his frame? He's up to like 230 pounds, and he can suffer, you know, bigger hits and that sort of thing too?
You know, I think the first thing they want to see for him is for him to be out there all 16 games. But I think ultimately they've probably really made up their mind on him, and that this will be his final season in Tennessee. I'm not really buying that more muscle will make much of a difference. I think it's probably the case that some guys just can't handle hits the same way, and that he's one of the guys who gets banged up more easily and more often. But the problem with this is, even if they wanted to move on from Mariota, what are you doing next? Their backups the past couple of years have been awful. They went from Zach Mettenberger to the Matt Castle to Blaine Gabbert. Those are guys who've been tried repeatedly, and they can't even play. They couldn't even play acceptably in a filling in for Marcus or in a 1 or 2 game sample size. There is no chance that they'd be the long-term answer. So they basically, so that you come to the fifth-year option and you think, okay, are we going to be able to find a quarterback that we'd actually want to play, or that we'd actually want to pay? And is there a guy that, you know, it would actually make sense to pay? And they're kind of basically got stuck with Marcus. My fever dream crazy scenario was the Titans would trade Marcus this offseason, but there's no team that would really be, but the same reason the Titans aren't willing to extend him long term is the same reason that teams aren't willing to teams wouldn't be willing to give up serious compensation for him. And, you know, you look at the reports that came out of Jacksonville last year, they signed Nick Foles. Yeah, we could have paid him less money, but we paid him more because that way the locker room knows that he's the starting quarterback and they actually have to pay attention to him. So it's not like there was a team that was desperate for to just have a potentially average starter this year who, you know, your guru may be able to fix. It's, if you look league-wide, basically every team has some sort of hope at quarterback, and it's the teams that they either have an average quarterback or a guy they hope will be a better than average quarterback. And, you know, we may really disagree with what Buffalo thinks Josh Allen is likely to be, but there's no real destination to move on from Marcus. And so the Titans were basically stuck with him, even though they're probably done with him after this year, and it's hard to see a scenario where he comes back unless he just plays terrific and is healthy all season, which, you know, that would be a sort of transformation and change in who he is, reminiscent of Derrick Henry's and players, and that doesn't normally happen.
Yeah, and I think also adding on to that too, that the kind of the worst thing you can do as far as the team playing perspective goes is paying a mediocre quarterback $30 million. You know, we saw what happened in Baltimore. We saw what happened in Detroit. We may be seeing that in Minnesota as well, too, depending on how Kirk Cousins bounced back this year as well. But it really giving up that much of your cap space to a quarterback who doesn't make its offensive line better, its receivers better, its running attack better, is really kind of like the easiest path to going 6-10 and 7-9 and really ruining your chances to build a playoff team or even a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, and Ryan Tannehill at least gives them a guy who could be a bridge quarterback if they don't get a high pick, or if they draft a guy just in the middle, or if they draft a Dwayne Haskins type prospect who might succeed in time, but you would prefer not to throw him in the lineup if you don't have to. Even though Tannehill's only signed through this year, they would at least have the first option of signing him to a next contract. And, you know, you've seen media reports lately that there's a real quarterback competition going on in Tennessee, and the people actually in Tennessee are saying, and if you pay any attention at all to the statements that John Robinson and Mike Vrabel have made in the past five months since they picked up Tannehill, you think Marcus is the starter. He's going to start week one, barring injury. And then we go from there. I'm not saying there's no chance Marcus gets benched, a healthy Marcus gets benched for Ryan Tannehill this year, but there's right now no quarterback competition.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I've been reading that a lot of those rumors and reports too, that, you know, Tannehill and Mariota, that maybe Tannehill starts week one instead. And I guess from what you're saying, it's not very likely, but could you see a situation where, you know, Marcus Mariota goes out with an elbow injury and Tannehill takes over week four and just starts as the quarterback for the rest of the year? Like, how high are you on Tannehill as a quarterback? And does anything like that seem even likely at all in Tennessee?
By DVOA, Tannehill has been a pretty consistently below average quarterback for his entire career. He had one slightly above average season when the Dolphins made the playoffs. He had a really bad season last year. I think part of that, a lot of that was down to the offensive line. The Dolphins were actually worse than the Texans at picking up defensive back blitzes. And so teams just brought defensive backs all the time and short-circuited the offense. Tannehill's kind of like, he's a more accurate Jake Locker. He doesn't really process well. He's a tentative thrower. He's more accurate than Locker. He's not hyper-accurate. And he doesn't like to throw to the middle of the field. He looks for clear reads on the numbers He can force throws outside better than Mariota can, but I don't see a lot to recommend him as an option as a long-term starter. He's probably in the Ryan Fitzpatrick level of the 25th to 35th best quarterback in the league, high-end backup, below-average starter that you're not going to commit to long-term. But that's a lot better than Castle and Gabbert and Mettenberger.
Yeah. I think the one good thing for Tannehill in the offense, if he is able to play or ends up playing at all, is the fact that he has a good arm, and he can throw some deep passes well. I think that's kind of one of the frustrating things about watching Mariota play is that he doesn't really push the ball downfield, and usually whenever he does, he's running up in the pocket and throwing with four momentum to make those throws downfield. Whereas Ryan Tannehill is more of that. Kind of that strong arm guy who can stand in pressure and kind of deliver some absurd throws. And whenever you have that as a complement to what may be a really great rushing attack, that's at least like interesting. It's not like good, but over, you know, the course of, you know, 35 throws a game, but at least it's interesting to have some big play potential there.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things about Marcus that's so frustrating is that he sometimes flashes the ability within the design of the offense to attack downfield, but the Titans aren't a very fast team at wide receiver. When they drafted AJ Brown, they thought, you know, they might instead draft his Ole Miss teammate DK Metcalf, who would present much more of a true vertical threat. The only guy they really have who presents the possibility right now is Taywan Taylor, and they're reasonably not high on Taywan Taylor. I'm not even sure he'll be active for games on a regular basis, especially because he doesn't really add any special teams values. So it's sort of like, so they have a quarterback who won't naturally throw downfield, who's not naturally aggressive throwing into tight windows, and a receiving core that doesn't present much of a vertical speed element. And so that's not a formula for getting off the big chunk plays, which puts a premium on how efficient you can be in all aspects of the game, which is fine when you're the Patriots and not if you're most other teams.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to add to the offense all before we start talking about Dean Pease's defense and Mike Vrabel's defense, I should say?
I don't know what they're going to do if Derrick Henry misses significant time because of, I'm not sure they have a good backup on the roster. They are leading. The guy who's been the lead back with Henry out for the first two preseason games is Jeremy McNichols, and Mike Vrabel is visibly not high on him. So I'm sure they'll add a back. You know, if Kenneth Dixon gets cut in Baltimore and he's available, then I think they'd be interested in him. But that guy's not on the roster right now, I don't think.
Interesting. So for the Titans defense, Their defense is weird mainly because the amount of investment that they had in their secondary. They gave Kevin Byard a giant contract extension this past offseason. They also used free agency to sign Logan Ryan. They signed Malcolm Butler. They used a top 15 pick on Adoree Jackson as well, too. And last year, they had a below-average pass defense, as they've typically had in previous years. Last season, they finished 21st in pass defense DVOA at 9.4%. How much of this bad pass defense do you credit with the secondary, and how much of it do you credit with the pass rush? Because they were 26th in pressure rate, and Brian Racpro and Derek Morgan, they both just retired, like you mentioned earlier. They combined for 2 sacks, 13 quarterback hits, and 32 pressures. So if they do see an improvement in pass rush with Cameron Wake and Harold Landry instead, do you think the secondary is good enough here to make up for it and be able to jolt this pass defense maybe to something above average?
I hope so. It was Morgan and Arakpo basically just their injuries caught up to them and they ran out of gas. Neither of them had any juice as a pass rusher last year, and that was a big loss. They both played reasonably well the year before. They both played well over the course of their careers, but neither of them did much of anything last year, and that really hurt the defense. They helped the Titans finish well in second level sacks. They got a lot, which are sacks from inside linebackers and from the secondary. That's something that Dean Pease has done a lot over the course of his career in New England and Baltimore before coming to Tennessee, but it's not ideal, and hopefully they'll get a lot more. The secondary, I struggle with. They signed Malcolm Butler to a big money free agency contract last year, and I don't know what his standout trait is athletically. I don't really see that he has one. And I think one of the things that you saw in his transition to Tennessee is just in New England, they were able to cover. It seemed like New England was a little bit better coached, a little bit better coordinated. They were better at playing together, which I think lets players who don't have a standout trait accomplish more. Quarters coverage was a particular issue. They have a long touchdown against quarters in week one against Miami, and this against Philadelphia in week six, I think it was, in San Diego, or excuse me, against the Chargers the week or two after that. And, you know, Butler was eventually taken out of the starting lineup in favor of Adoree Jackson and Logan Ryan. He played outside a nickel, which, you know, was the primary personnel grouping, and he played well the second half of the season. But by then, it's sort of like, okay, we paid you $13 million a year to do what exactly? Which was frustrating. Adoree Jackson remains a great athlete and not a great cornerback. He's, you know, first preseason game, he gave up a touchdown to, Sony Michel's brother, I believe it was, who's a depth wide receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles. He was in a good position, tried to make a play on the ball. He's actually surprisingly effective going up against bigger receivers. He had some good plays that game, but, you know, T.Y. Hilton toasted him a lot in the games against the Colts last year. And he's one of the corners who can match Hilton in terms of both agility and long speed. So that's not exactly what you would think happened. Logan Ryan, you know, terrific slot player, broke his leg late last year. Seems to have recovered just fine. No real worries about him. It's just don't expect him to be your number one corner, and you'll be happy.
I can see what you're saying. I think the secondary here can be good if Byard still keeps playing the same level. And I think most importantly, though, it does come to the edge rushing, the fact that they have to get, you know, something out of it. Cameron Wake is going to be 37 this year, and every year of his career, he's still produced. I don't know if I would have invested in a 37-year-old edge rusher, but, I mean, he's still been really good up to this point in his career. And this is the second year for Harold Landry. How do you see these two guys projecting in 2019? Are you expecting them to be, you know, like a good edge rushing duo? And are you expecting and how do you think the Titans are going to use them? Do you think they're going to rush a lot more four rush sets with them, you know, out wide against tackles? Or do you see DMPs continue to blitz heavily this year?
Pease's background is that he's always been a multiple guy, and I imagine, you know, this will be the anti-Jim Schwartz. He won't just put him outside in the wide nine and tell him to just get after the quarterback. He'll move guys around. Wake, I'd imagine they'll limit his snaps the same way Miami did. I'm not expecting him to play more than 500 or 600 snaps and to concentrate on obvious pass rush situations and for him to sit a lot on, you know, first and 10. Outside of 2-minute drill and situations like that. You know, he's a year-to-year proposition. We haven't seen him in preseason games yet. They've been really giving him a lot of workload and maintenance days and training camp. So I'm not in Nashville, so I haven't gotten a chance to see him yet. Landry's not played in either of the first two preseason games either, but he apparently has made the jump from year one to year two. He's added some weight. He looks thicker. I think they'll be more prepared and willing to play him on all situations and to really count on him to play the 800 plus snaps that we were hoping Morgan and Rakpo played last year. The guy opposite Landry in base situations is probably going to be second year man Sharif Finch. He was an undrafted free agent last year. He looked good in a limited role. I think he played about 225 snaps, but he'll have to play a lot more than that this year. Behind Finch, they have a lot of question marks. Fifth round pick DeAndre Walker is on IR. He's out for the year with an injury. They haven't bothered to tell us about. Kamalay Correa, veteran outside linebacker, played for DNP's for a long time. He's really under strength for an edge setting player. He couldn't do much against the Eagles' third string tackle in the first preseason game. So, and that's, you know, Andre Diller just completely shut him down. Sorry not to rub any sore wounds if you're a Texans fan, still angry about getting sniped for him. And then it's behind that you have guys I think of as roster flotsam and jetsam. Guys who really haven't played a serious role in the NFL. So the Titans are really thin at outside linebacker, which is a thing that really scares me. I'm sight unseen. I'm relatively enthusiastic about about Landry and Wake. The other guys, more than a little worried about, especially Finch wearing down over the course of the season. This probably won't be 2015 when Derek Morgan got hurt week 13 and the last four games they had one of the worst pass defenses you're ever going to see, but I'm not convinced it will be that much better than last year's. And I think relative to last year going into the season, it looks like the Titans are in worse shape. Last year we just got a worst case scenario. Last year was basically the worst case scenario. This year's worst case scenario at outside linebacker is even worse.
As you're just saying, I'm really excited to watch Harold Landry play this year, like you mentioned, and hopefully he does make that leap from year one to year two. I love his speed off the edge, his edge rush, and also he has such a great like nose for the football and really great instinct. Like I love watching him defend screen passes. He sees the guard take off, and he knows immediately where the ball is and is able to. To not even let the quarterback make those throws out to the running back or wide receiver sometimes.
Yeah, I loved Landry coming out of Boston College. Guys who can bend like that are just I have a man crush on all of them. It was just that by the first month of the season, teams figured out that, okay, all you have to do is just overset the edge on him, and he's not that hard to block. So it's the added weight in the development of a second pass rush move. Dave McGinnis, the old Cardinals coach, is now the Titans radio color analyst, and he was talking about an inside chop move that Landry demonstrated against the Patriots that he'd never seen from him before. And that's the kind of things that gets me really excited about his potential as a pass rusher.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that gets missed about edge rushers and is that you have to have a counter move. If it's just outside bend and rip, you'll get stopped down, eventually. I think Vic Beasley's a really good example of that, of a guy who never figured out a counter move, too.
Yeah, maybe just because I wrote about the Raiders when he was there and then he joined the Titans. Cameron Wimbley is a guy who was a top 10 pick back in 2006, but he was a guy who never really developed a second move. And, you can still, if you're really good at that outside dip and rip move, you can still have a long career, but like Beasley shows, ultimately you will be stalled and you won't reach your ceiling.
Yeah. So I know that they drafted Rashawn Evans in the first round, not last year, but the year before. What do you think about him? Do you think he has Pro Bowl potential? And how do you like the pairing of him and Jayon Brown, as Evans can be more the run stopper and Jayon Brown being more the coverage guy / blitzer?
I think Pease will really do a lot with Evans this year. He was the guy who missed a lot of last training camp with a hamstring injury, had a really slow start to the season. Mid-year, he was not a very good player. He was really slow to key and diagnose runs, and he would basically just stand there and get blocked at times. By the end of the year, he was starting to really blow up the run plays. And he's been one of the guys, like Landry, who's talked about as having made the second-year leap. So he's never going to be a guy who's really sticky in pass coverage, but he's really effective going forward. And I think with the limited depth at outside linebacker, the Titans will count on him a lot as a rusher. You'll hear some comparisons between him and Dont'a Hightower. Don't listen to those. Hightower is 30 pounds bigger.
Yeah, and Hightower is actually like a surprisingly good edge rusher too.
People talk about Evans as an edge rusher and an edge setter, and that's not going to be his game if you care that much about defending the run.
Yeah, and Evans didn't do much pass rushing last year, but based on his profile and watching some of the explosion you see in the run game, I do think that's a stone that will be uncovered this year for Dean Pease and his aggressive, blitz-heavy defense.
Yeah, another issue the Titans have is outside of Jurrell Casey, they don't really have anybody up front who can rush the passer effectively, and they haven't shown real interest in adding that type of player, unless you count Simmons, who probably won't play this year. So I think what you may see from the Titans is a lot of five linebacker sets they may play some 1-5-5 nickel with Casey, Landry, Wake, and then getting Evans, Jayon Brown, and Wesley Woodyard all on the field, and letting either Evans or Woodyard rush, or maybe both of them rush and from different positions.
Yeah, I would love to see something like that. And especially considering how good Casey is at creating open rushing lanes by being the hammer on stunts and setting up things by taking on two offensive linemen at the same time and creating loops open for his linebackers. You rarely see like anything wild like a 1-5-5, but you see it sometimes in Baltimore and other places, and it's always like really cool and joyous to see those kind of like absurd fronts on third down situations.
Yeah, and the other thing I wonder if they do is if they play some more dime defense. That's something that Pease did under Belichick and then some in New England, and they didn't really have the safety depth to do it last year. But fourth-round pick Amani Hooker, who's a safety, he'll probably back up both Byard and strong safety Kenny Vaccaro. He might give them that possibility, and that'll just add more creative options. So I'm hoping for some more that way to help out the lack of depth at outside linebacker and in terms of pass rushing up front.
Yeah, that, and also mentioning Casey and the fact that there's no other pass rushing options really there on the defensive line. If you look at their depth chart right now, it shows Daquan Jones at nose tackle, and he's a fine run stopper. It shows the other defensive end is Brent Urban, and I've always kind of wondered why they never invested in at the defensive line position, try to find another interior rusher to pair with Casey to try to put this pass rush over the top. And it seems like they try to do that by drafting Jeffrey Simmons, but Simmons, as you mentioned, is going to probably miss the entirety of the 2019 season. So looking at that now, looking at this team and kind of the expectations that they placed on themselves, do you find it surprising that they took Simmons with their first-round pick, and maybe they should have gone and moved up in the draft and taken an edge player like Rashawn Gary or Montez Sweat or somebody along those lines?
Yeah. John Robinson had really been focused on immediate needs and first-year impact with his previous first-round picks. They drafted Jack Conklin because they needed a right tackle. They drafted Corey Davis because they needed a wide receiver, and Adoree Jackson in the first round because they needed a corner. They drafted Evans because they really needed a three-down linebacker. That was a need that I saw a year in advance. So it was really surprising to see him take a guy who's probably not going to play this year, even at a position where they really needed an impact player. Simmons has the potential to be a terrific player. I was expecting him to go somewhere like Miami, where they're not really trying, winning this year is optional.
Yeah, yeah, I think that would have been a better pick for them as well, too, to grab a smile like that instead of just a more of a big run stopper defensive line. So the last question I have for you before I want your prediction is that Mike Vrabel is back as the head coach of the Tennessee Titans, and he's ready to lead his men again. I know, as you know, as part of being the part of the Texans universe, we were really like confused by the defenses he ran as the defensive coordinator. Never felt like he did a very good job at all. And we're really surprised whenever he went to Tennessee as the head coach. But as far as everything that you hear about him, they all say he's a great teacher, he's a great leader, he's a great mentor and that sort of thing. And it seems like those soft skills were the main reason why he got the job as the head coach, to be more of a manager than, you know, a defensive genius. So what did you think about his rookie season as a head coach? How did he do as far as, you know, challenges and fourth down decisions go? And what do you think he needs to improve on in 2019?
I was kind of worried that they hired a guy who is so thinly experienced. You know, he had the few years coaching for Urban Meyer, and he had the few years in Texans with the Texans, including just one season as a coordinator. So I was like, does this guy have enough experience? Because I don't really count playing experience as sufficient preparation for being a head coach. And maintaining as good as team as they've been was really goes a long way to help allay my suspicions. The Titans did not fall off on a cliff. He did not make a bunch of stupid mistakes. He didn't talk about how he'd never watched 7-on-7 drills before like Mike Munchak did. And it really does seem like he has the soft skills necessary to be an NFL head coach. What worries me is the lack of staff, and this may sound like a weird thing, is the lack of staffing changes from year one to year two. Because outside of, you know, LaFleur left for Green Bay, tight ends coach Arthur Smith was promoted to offensive coordinator. They hired a new tight ends coach. That was it in terms of the on-field coaching staff. The only thing he changed up was the strength and conditioning guy, which means he believes he got his first staff absolutely right and perfect. And one of the things that you hear about NFL coaches is, I knew exactly who I wanted for my first staff. And then after the first year, I had to make a couple changes, and I had to make a couple upgrades here and a couple upgrades there. And, you know, that guy wasn't as effective as preaching my message as I wanted him to be. So I'm worried that there are obvious and not so obvious potential issues there, and that they're overvaluing staff continuity relative to getting the best possible coach, especially after the search for a head coach was somewhere between extremely quiet and somnambulant. And they basically sleepwalked through it, hired the obvious internal candidate after no news came out after a week and a half, when you would expect, for every other coordinator opening, you hear about multiple people being hired. But maybe the Titans are just really good at information discipline. So I don't know. If I had to highlight one guy in particular, it would be wide receivers coach Rob Moore. The Titans have been high on Corey Davis. They've been high on Taywan Taylor. They've been looking for a lot from Tajay Sharp. Moore's a guy who's gotten some pretty bad reviews after they left Buffalo for the Rams. Both Robert Woods and Sammy Watkins talked about how it felt like they were finally getting decent coaching, which is a pretty damning thing to say about your old position. Which seems like a pretty damning thing to say about your old position, coach. And Moore has the resume of a guy who is jettisoned as soon as you find somebody you like better.
Yeah.
Not to, you know, he was a great NFL player. I'm sure he's a much better wide receivers coach than I'd be, but he seems like a guy that you could have upgraded on, and it's not like he has strong ties to Vrabel, Robinson, or Arthur Smith.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. The Malarkey thing, I think, was even more interesting than the Vrabel thing, because, like you mentioned, there was no news, and then they just kind of brought him on, and he was kind of lame duck, and then he actually won a playoff game, and they fired him anyways. And it's been kind of a weird trajectory for the Titans to get to Mike Vrabel to begin with.
And it was the Vrabel hiring process was it was clear that they, like the Mularkey hiring process, it was clear they had a favorite candidate in mind, and it was clear that there was no real search involved.
Yeah.
And I really hope they got it right, because I don't trust that this is a good way to learn about anything.
Well, those are high hopes there. So for the 2019 season for the Tennessee Titans, what's your prediction for their record? Where do you think they finish in the AFC South? And how do you think their season ends?
They look like a pretty average team. And the schedule isn't as good as they were last year, so I'll probably say I reserve the right to change my mind when I write my full season prediction column after final roster cutdowns. But right now, I'm thinking 8-8, and that'll probably be second or third in the AFC South, depending on to what extent Houston and Jacksonville get their act together. Jacksonville, it's whether they can maintain the locker room and have a really strong defense and get enough out of an offense that has a lot of areas to improve, but needs to be just recover from the disaster that last year was to really return to playoff contention. And Houston, you know the issues with the Texans better than I am up front, and then how solvent making sure that they play as well on defense as the presence of or potential presence of some really good players makes you think they can play.
I wrote a season preview for the Titans. I'm gonna post tomorrow, and I had them at 8-8 as well too. I do think, like, performance wise I think, like, their point differential will be better. I think they'll have probably maybe seventh or even fifth best rushing offense if Derrick Henry stays healthy. I think their defense will slightly improve this year just because Arakpo and Morgan were so non-existent last season. But I do think they win a game less because the schedule is tougher, and they sit at 8-8 as well.
Yeah, and the other thing is they have the potential to be a better team and not finish as well. It's sort of, I thought 2016 and 2017 that both teams finished 9-7, I think everybody in Tennessee would agree the 2016 team was better, and if it was just that the 2017 had the right tiebreakers, that 9-7 made the playoffs and they were able to win a close playoff game and make it to the divisional round for the first time and not since 2008. So it was just, that's just the way it breaks sometimes.
Yeah, the joys of small sample sizes. I think that's one of the fundamental things that you kind of learn once you start diving into the numbers for the NFL is that the small sample size can just wreck wonders on a season, and how much that can affect a team's year, every single season potentially, or for sure, I should say.
It should be an interesting watch. This isn't one of those teams from a few years ago where there's no reason to really get that into the season.
That's the best, I guess the best way to describe tying up I've ever heard. So I am excited to watch the Titans as well too. And at least they're more interesting this year than I felt. I was interested in them last year with the whole LaFleur thing, but their offense turned out to be really boring. And this year, I think if P is more aggressive, and then every time you have a rookie quarterback who may be at the end of his like last chance to start, that's always an interesting storyline too. So I don't know if you have anything else that you want to plug at all for us that we should check out, or you can let us know in that season previews to be posted and when and where. But I would love to hear more about what you have upcoming for the 2019 season and where we can find it.
Yeah, big thing is the book Football Outsiders Almanac 2019. It's available for $20 in a PDF on the site www.footballoutsiders.com, or you can find a dead tree version on Amazon. I think it's listed for $28 or $29.95, and Amazon normally has it discounted. Also at Football Outsiders, you can find our Kubiak Fantasy Football Projection System, customizable and regularly updated. And we've now switched to a web interface, so you don't have to keep downloading an Excel file every and reinstalling your settings every time every time we update. So it's a lot easier to use. It's a lot nicer. It's a lot more fun to play with. I do most of my chiming in these days on Twitter, where I'm found at Thomas Gower, last name G-O-W-E-R. The season preview post I'll do will be from my personal site. You can find a link to that in my Twitter profile. I don't post on there very much these days, but that'll be up there. And then I hope to finish before the start of the season something related to my Colts chapter. I took a concept developed by college football stats guy Bill Connolly, who is associated with us, recently hired by ESPN, called Havoc Rate, which looks at how disruptive defenses are, and found that the Colts did not rank that highly in Havoc Rate. So as their slate of opposing offenses gets a lot tougher, their defense probably won't be as good.
Interesting.
There's a lot more. There's a lot more to do with that subject, and I'm hoping to show more of that in something before the season. But I need to finish that research and then write that up still.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll look forward to reading that. And yeah, you mentioned if you haven't, buy the book. It's really great. And then also, if you want any sort of counting stats, always make sure to subscribe for like the premium DVOA database and also the charting data, where you can get the pressures and the success rate for defensive backs and all the other really great numbers that you have in the book at the end of the year. But now they're able to update it throughout the week. And I really like it because it's more of an objective look at those sort of numbers that aren't quantifying the box score. And it's worth checking out as well, too, especially considering the Kubiak package that comes along with it in the book, too.
Yep. I don't necessarily do a ton with the charting stats during the season outside of the really big team ones, like especially pressure rate for both offense and defense. But it's nice that we finally have that available thanks to our partnership with Sports Info Solutions, who collects all of that data for us.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being on tonight, Tom. I'll be on the lookout for your final preview. And thank you for the prediction for the Titans. Thank you for listening to Bell Rib Radio, everybody. My name is Matt Weston. And be on the lookout for other AFC South preview podcasts and also posts as we get closer to the 2019 NFL season.
That sounded good to me. I thought it was pretty good.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant, super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.